8:15 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. As we reported, the Summit County Council met yesterday. In the studio with a recap, I have Councilmember Glenn Wright. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, Leslie.
So first off, you interviewed applicants for the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. This was to replace Colin DeFord's
seat?
That's
correct.
All right. How many did you have?
We had five. It turned out one didn't live in the district, so we wound up with four.
Okay. Did you pick somebody?
We did. And I can't tell you who yet, but you'll find out in the agenda when it comes out tomorrow. We're still notifying people as to the result. But we had some very, very, very qualified people apply.
All right.
Very, very happy with the selection choice.
All right. And, I mean, what do you look for when you choose a planning commissioner?
Someone who's concerned about the community, who shows they've been involved in the community, and has the time, because it's a demanding job, and has a concept of what they think Summit County should look like.
So that announcement gets made at next week's meeting?
Yes,
then?
We'll be making it during next Wednesday's meeting. Probably you'll find the name in the agenda when it's posted tomorrow.
All right. Let's see. You also had a presentation of the annual financial report here. We had talked with Tom Fisher earlier this week, and there was some concern about how the county handles its budget overruns.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys change policy on that? Or?
Well, we didn't talk about that extensively during the discussion, but yes, we did discuss it yesterday, and we're going to try to get the various departments to track their expenses during the year a little more closely and make sure if they're going over budget, they better tell people. And if they don't, they're going to lose the money next year.
So whose job is that, though, to track budget expenditures? The department heads?
Yes. Yeah, it's up to department heads. And, of course, Tom to oversee the department heads. Of course, some of the department heads are elected officials. So, yeah, the only recourse you have on them is, well, you spent it this year, you don't get it next year.
Well, and that was something we had heard, that one of the cost overruns was a change in the contract for the food service at the jail. So that's Summit County Sheriff Justin Martinez's issue. And so he'll need to figure out how he cuts back next year to
make up for that. Yeah. As a part of his budget, I think it's a fairly small issue. He's got the biggest budget in the county. And he has about a third of all the employees.
So how often do budget overruns happen? I mean, is it a rare occurrence?
It's relatively rare. It's a relatively small portion of the overall budget.
Okay.
The good news from the audit was there were no serious findings. It was essentially what's known as a clean audit.
Yeah. And then so what changes will we see? Just kind of a memo to business department heads?
We'll look at how the departments do their business all year long and make sure the department managers are on top of things. First time I've been involved in reading the audit, it was 179 pages. No, I didn't read every page. There is fascinating information in there. If anybody wants to read it, it's online. County finances are pretty complicated based upon how the state tells us we have to account for various tax funds and how we can spend them. And there's pretty good explanations in there.
All right. Let's see. You also spent some time looking at the Summit County transportation model.
Yes.
What did you get out of this?
This is a model that we'll be using to predict how much traffic we'll get on the roads. And it's used in conjunction with other programs that we looked at 2 weeks ago when we were discussing the Jeremy Ranch intersection and the effects that Klein-Dolly might have on it. Different models predict when intersections will fail. This model predicts how many people will actually be on the roads. So when you put them together and you see what your real traffic situation is down the road, it can predict with accurate inputs, 10, 20, 30, 40 years off, if your inputs are correct. So you have to keep looking at it on a regular basis. I think it's going to give us the opportunity to do a lot of what ifs. What if this area grows faster than this area? So we'll be able to look at that on a regular basis and adjust traffic planning based upon the model.
So how many cars are going to be on the road in the next? Do you have those numbers?
I don't. No. No, this was just a discussion of what how the model works. We will be asking that question of our transit department going forward.
So the study hasn't been done.
This was discussion of the model that will be used.
Okay. And then did you find any issues with it? Things that you'd like to see maybe changed or?
No, I think it was pretty straightforward. It looks like a fairly standard model that a lot of traffic people use. And the good part of it, some of these models in the past have taken 20 hours to run on a computer. This one takes 20 minutes. So you can do a lot of what-ifs with it.
So we're using the money then from the transit taxes that people approve to pay for this? How much is the study going to cost?
I don't have that number. I don't think they mentioned it yesterday.
And then when will
it's, we? It's actually a program that will be available for us to use. What I do remember from the discussion is UDOT is buying the license, and we get to use it.
Got it. So when will we have some results?
Can't tell you that. It will be available for us pretty much immediately. So when we want to analyze results, as we discuss new developments, it'll be available for us.
All right.
So it's kind of an on-demand program.
You also had several agenda items with regard to noxious weeds. Anything newsworthy there?
Nothing spectacular there. We added 4 noxious weeds that none of us had ever heard of before, but are considered problematic. Unique to Summit County that are not on the state list. And we approved ordinances and regulations on how we treat weeds in the county.
So they have to be named in order to get rid of them?
Yep.
Yeah, so what are we doing, spraying or?
Yes, generally spraying.
Is there?
But there actually are, I read through some of the information, and there are methods for some weeds, you actually want to pull them. So that takes a lot more work. And it depends where they are in their cycle. If they're seeding already, spraying doesn't help. So you got to pull them and bag them and make sure they don't spread.
Yeah. What's the worst? Do you talk about the worst noxious weeds?
I asked this question. And I said, I can't tell one flower from another. Can you help us on identifying these weeds? And actually, there's a booklet, and it's on the weed abatement website that people can look at. And we got one hard copy that Kim Carson took with her because she's got some on her property.
Okay. Let's see. Any action with regard to the appeal of the community development director's decision on the Brooks residence?
We turned that appeal down.
So what does that mean?
That means the original homeowner who planned his house, can go forward and start to build.
Okay. And this is the decision was
assuming there are no further appeals.
The decision was to allow the house to be built on the ridgeline, breaking the ridgeline.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Because it was considered critical, not only a ridgeline, but critical lands for other reasons, steep slopes and it turned out, they have a right to build a house on the land, and the legal argument is that's actually the least obtrusive place to put it. There were some other suggestions from the appellants, put it further down, but what that would have resulted in was a large serpentine driveway that was also going to be visible from Route 80. And the planning department, planning commission, and the council all thought that the decision made by the planning director on it was the appropriate one. It was the least obtrusive of the options.
So the concern from the appellants was that the house on the ridge would block their views then? Was that what it came down to?
That's what it came down to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you also took public input with regard to the Summit County Resource Management Plan. We've been talking about this for a while, but did you take some action? Is it done?
We approved it, and it is now part of the Eastern and Snyderville Basin planning codes as an addendum. So as we change it, we don't have to actually modify the codes. And there was zero public comment.
And this is required by the state to do these, so at our
mm-hmm.
cost. And then those have to be filed with the state, and what are they going to do with them?
Well, this is all part of the state legislature's plan for how to use public lands if we steal public lands from the feds. So we complied by saying we like to have federal lands in Summit County, and we'll take care of them.
Well, you use the word steal. They say take back what's rightfully ours.
Yeah, I guess you could put it either way.
Okay. All right, anything
else? Depends which side of the that argument you're on.
Right. Anything else that you wanted to mention?
Yes, there's lots of new things coming in the near future. The solid waste bills will be coming out from Waste Management fairly soon. And I have a copy here of the flyer that's going to go in that explaining all the ins and outs of that particular issue. Next week we have several significant events. On Tuesday in Colville from 4 to 7, there's a 25,000 jobs launch tour from the State Department of Economic Development. And that's there's an initiative from the governor to create 25,000 rural jobs outside the Wasatch Front in the next 4 years. So this is the kickoff in Summit County.
I'll be talking to the Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox about that tomorrow.
And I invited a couple of solar installers to attend so they can show how solar energy jobs could be part of that mix as long as the Public Service Commission doesn't kill the industry. But that's another subject. On Wednesday, we're going to be rolling out the e-bike program before the county council meeting. And the county council will be mounting up the bikes at Kimball Junction Transit Center. The city council here will be mounting up here, and we'll meet at the White Barn and have the official rollout of the bike program. There is information on website that you can look at. The bikes are not there yet, but it will show you where the stands are going to be for the bikes. And we have one in our neighborhood right down near. It's going to be in that walking area between the Park Record and SD Pizza and somewhere in there. And on Friday, the Kimball Junction Circulator starts business. And we'll be circulating through Kimball Junction and allowing people to take the electric bus to the transit center there, do their shopping, go to dinner, have a few drinks down in that area. And that service will be 15-minute service. Making a loop around the area, and then you'll be able to get on the bus and travel throughout this side of the county back to Park City.
So there are designated stops as part of this?
It's going to take that route that I've shown you there, and that will be available on the website soon. It's a flag down type service. It's just going to be circulating. You want a ride, you raise your hand, it'll stop for you.
All right, so you don't need to call.
You just need to
be out by the road.
And it's every 15 minutes.
Okay. Hey, Glenn, thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
That's Summit County Council member Glenn Wright. This is KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:30. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Joining me now in the studio, member of the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission, Chuck Klingenstein. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So now, Colin DeFord, they did app interviews for his position. Is he still sitting on the commission?
No, Colin resigned and moved on because he had some major workload issues. And, he took his job seriously and wanted to make sure that, he could honor it. And he said, I need to work. So we're looking for a new commissioner. And I heard there were interviews.
Okay. So you're one short at this point.
Correct.
All right, let's see. One of the agenda items was a public hearing and possible action on a conditional use permit for a petrified wood park in Silver Creek. This is, I remember, the county came across it was like a gigantic piece of petrified wood. And so that's what this is where this is going?
Yeah, and if people ever want to see it, if you go out to the county services building out of Kimball Junction where the library is, downstairs there's a chunk of finished, beautiful, polished, petrified wood. There's another one over in the courthouse. And a contractor, Jim Park, actually ran into it when he was working out there years ago. And the goal is if they find more, to create a petrified wood park. And that was approved, and it looked like a good thing.
Okay, and you also got a public hearing and action on the conditional use permit for the neighborhood park. So are these two different parks?
Yeah, they were two different applications. This one, there's a 12-acre neighborhood park, which will, you know, be for the residents of this new village, which has 11 or 1,200 units. And the rub was over restrooms. You know, and we understand the developer's desire not to build restrooms too early, and yet the staff felt it's important to have restrooms, and we agree that they should have restrooms. But, you know, it gets into, you know, paying for them, taking care of them, security issues. So we asked the staff to go back with the developer to come up with a temporary solution until there's enough of a enough homes out there, perhaps some sort of civic uses adjacent to it that could allow for a joint management of those facilities. But we did ask them to come up with a more of a date certain than phase two, because we never know when phase two is going to be. So we felt it was fair to get bathrooms out there, because it's not just the home, you know, 1,200 homes roughly. But, you know, it's on a trail system, and we all ride the trails and enjoy them. It also is a place where I take my grandkids, and we go out and visit parks of the basin, and there's just so many great parks out there.
So are honey buckets then the temporary solution?
Possibly. We left that up to the staff and developer to figure out a good temporary solution that everybody could live with.
So this is the developer of Silver Creek Village developing this. This is not the park that'll be done by Snyderville Basin.
Yeah, Rec. Totally separate. But it's a 12-acre park, and it will be big and has a lot of potential uses and recreation areas and playgrounds and multi-use fields. And anyway, it is a neighborhood park, though.
Okay. What else on the meeting that you thought was newsworthy?
Well, I think the other one that was, you know, we have a horse facility, horse boarding facility out in the homeowners area, Old Ranch Road area. And we asked the staff to go back and tighten up some of the approval items. It's a conditional use permit, and the thing we keep running into on conditional use permits is we're trying to educate everybody about the fact that, first of all, a conditional use permit isn't allowed use, but it is, you have to have conditions to mitigate the impacts. And the most important factor of these is they run with the land. So once a property owner sells their property, the use continues. It's there forever. So we ask the staff to go back, make sure that the conditions were very tight and met the goals of the owners of the property, and yet gave us some long-term management of those. And some input looked at water rights. We asked them to look at the details of the water rights and get those cleared up. But otherwise, it looks like a very good use of the property that's currently in place.
Okay. Anything else?
No. Thank you, Leslie.
Okay, Chuck, thanks. Well, the Park City Planning Commission had another look at the Treasure application. In the studio with a recap of last night's meeting, Planning Commission Chairman Adam Strong. Good morning.
Good morning.
So the Treasure applicants convinced that they would be asking for a decision in October. But after last night's presentation, the public comment that you had, as well as comments from staff, you and several other planning commissioners said there's no way you could approve the application based on the vague language you're seeing or not having the details that you've requested. So how optimistic are you that they are going to follow through and get you the details that you're looking for?
Well, you know, I remain optimistic that the applicant will fulfill their obligations under the code. Whether or not that happens by October when the applicant says they want a decision, I can't say. The applicant, of course, as I've said before, always has the option to pull the ripcord in October, whether they've provided the information or not, and that may be what they'll do. We'll see.
All right. Let's see. The applicant had a beautifully executed video presentation of the project, I guess done by drones?
Yeah, you know, I'm not exactly sure how they did that. It did provide some nice sort of landscape, broad picture views of the project, and you know, it's on their website. I haven't gone in and looked at it closely. Last night was the first night we saw it. I'll check it out today. But you know, those types of drones and digital images are usually really helpful to just get a broader perspective. Now, I mean, it's not the specifics that we're asking the applicant for, but it does go to compatibility, so it's helpful to have.
Yeah, certainly some of the people in the audience weren't too happy with what they saw. We had heard somebody kind of say under their breath, "What are you doing to our home?" What was your reaction to the video? I mean, you saw the removal of the trees and instead ski slopes and buildings in their place.
Well, you know, my reaction has remained the same. That video is based at least in part on a lot of the plans and diagrams that they've submitted to us and have submitted to us throughout. So, you know, my reaction wasn't changed by what I saw last night.
Okay. And in terms of the removal of the trees, I know that Park City considers open space and trees as a form of mitigation for their carbon footprint. Do we have any rules or guidelines about a development removing vegetation like that?
Well, we do, and that's an example of the specifics that we need from this applicant. You know, they have what you're alluding to, I think, is they're proposing to put a bunch of the excavation materials on site and basically build up the land, bury the trees, maybe, who knows, we don't know the specifics, but and, you know, the question is where exactly will that take place? And by exactly, I mean which trees will be impacted? How big is the diameter of the trunks of the trees? Because code is based on saving certain trees that have a trunk size of a sufficient diameter. So we need to know which trees we're talking about and how big they are and what, if anything, the applicant's going to do to mitigate that.
I mean, we're talking millions of square feet of material being moved, right? I mean, basically dirt. As they excavate, they would move it to other locations on the mountain.
Yeah, and last night they came up with what they termed a refinement to their plan, where they were going to put some of that excavated material up on the Payday ski run and on the King's Crown ski run, as well as on site, in order to mitigate the number of dump trucks that would be needed to go up and down Lowell and up and down Empire to excavate the project.
So I think the concern, though, is how do we keep that dirt where it's placed, huh?
Yeah, and that's a valid concern that, you know, Commissioner Campbell, I think, wisely picked up on is, you know, their geotech reports say that the land is moving. And so the question is, you know, will putting that material up higher on the mountain exacerbate that movement or lessen it? And that's a big question mark.
So is that something that the commission's now asking for? More geotechnical reports to say that?
Well, I'm not sure we need more geotechnical reports, but we need an answer to that question. I mean, I would assert that a thorough geotechnical report done in the first instance would have answered that question, but it hasn't so far.
All right. You specifically challenged the applicants on the letters that they submitted from utility providers asking if they provided staff with the same information that they provided these companies to be able to get and provide service. So it sounds like the letters aren't able to guarantee that.
Yeah, you know, the letters in essence say, you provide us with the information about how big your project is and we'll tell you about how much gas we're willing to provide or how much water, you know, we can provide. So it was, to me, a little bit disingenuous of the applicant to say, we've got letters from all the utilities saying we're good to go. That's not what those letters said. Those letters said, give us the specifics. We'll tell you if we got enough gas or we'll tell you if we got enough water. So that was another point that Commissioner Campbell picked up on. And the reason why I asked the question that you just asked is, if they're providing the utilities with more specific information than they're providing us, then I'd like to see it. But it appears they haven't provided the utilities with anything.
So is this typical of this project, or is this how it's always done?
Well, there's nothing typical about this project. So with something of this size, I'm not sure I'd be comfortable saying, hey, you know, that's just the way it rolls. So I can't say on that one.
During public comment, you had comments about the blasting and potential toxins in the air. Those were a big concern. One resident that is right on the edge of the project asked about how loud the blasting would be and about the resulting vibration. So has any of that been determined? And if not, I guess it can't be mitigated if it hasn't, you have no idea what you're in for.
Yeah, there's sort of two questions there, right? You know, one is, has any of that information been provided? The answer is no. Yet again, those are some of the specifics that I think both staff and the commission want to see from the applicant. The second question is, how can you mitigate that impact if you don't know what it is? And I think that's really where the rubber hits the road right now. And you know, the applicant is in a position of asking for a decision in October. And if we don't have this, and this is what I told them last night, if we don't have the specifics of the impacts, then we can't be put in a position of determining whether the mitigation they have suggested is reasonable or not.
I think somebody also asked, is the developer then responsible if there's any damage to surrounding homes due to the blasting? Do we know that answer?
Boy, that's a, you know, a legal question that I'm probably not qualified to answer. You know, I'd leave that up to the civil legal system.
Okay. So staff said that they're going to go back, they're going to pull, go back to the minutes, going to pull all the questions that the Planning Commission has asked and find out what needs to be answered. Any idea on how extensive that list is going to be?
Well, it's going to be pretty extensive. You know, I think what's going to be more important is what's the applicant's response going to be, because if the applicant looks at the list and just remains non-responsive, that puts us in the position of, again, not knowing what the impacts are and therefore not knowing what reasonable mitigation is. The applicant, as I've asked them too many times, if they're not going to provide the information that we've asked for, they need to say so. If they're going to provide the information, they need to say that as well. But there can't be this limbo of non-responsiveness where we don't know whether our questions are going to be asked or not. Which in the end falls on the applicant, because if they're going to ask for a decision in October, our presumption will be that all the evidence is in, that the applicant has provided everything they're going to provide, and they're asking us to make a determination based on what they've provided. So to me, it's in the applicant's best interest to provide as much information as possible so that we can make a decision by October 20th. If they don't provide the information and we make a decision, then, you know, that decision may come out differently than the applicant wants.
So can you talk about the legal repercussions of that at all? I mean, if you have don't have the complete answers to it, I mean, wouldn't a judge send you back to say, answer the questions and then let's talk, or?
Well, you know, I don't know the legal repercussions on that. And we have, you know, special counsel Jody Burnett, who is well-versed and highly competent in these kinds of things. I suspect we will be coordinating with him to figure out what the answer to that question is, because as the applicant said, if they're going to ask for a decision in October and we don't have the answers to a lot of our questions, I don't know what legal position that puts us in. And so I'll be asking Jody about that.
All right. Finally, I want to ask you about the Lilac Hill subdivision. That property is going to be subdivided into how many lots?
Two lots.
Okay. And there was some concern about a shared driveway. Was that resolved last night?
You know, I don't think it was resolved insofar as the neighbors wanted one outcome and the applicant wanted a different outcome. We decided to side with the applicant based on the city engineer's opinion that two separate driveway entrances to the unit were, you know, from an engineering perspective, fully safe, and he had put some conditions on the driveway that made it, you know, better. So resolve, you know, tough to say. I think you'd have to ask the neighbors, and I think you'd have to ask the applicant. I do know there was a lot of cooperation and compromise with and between the neighbors and the applicant before they ever came to us, so maybe.
Okay. Anything else from last night's meeting that's worth noting?
You know, the sustainability department and Craig Elliott came in with a preview of the affordable housing project that's going to be down on Woodside and Park Avenue where the old fire station is. And I was encouraged by what I saw at that work session meeting, very preliminary, but I'd just like to thank them. I think they've done a lot of work, and I think that project is going in the right direction.
Okay. Hey, Adam, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Joining me now in the studio from the Park City Christian Center, I have Director Rob Harder along with Programs Director Pete Stoughton. Good morning to both of you guys.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
So you've got a couple of programs you wanted to mention. You've first got a silent auction coming up. When and where is this?
Yeah, absolutely. So July 20th, this next Thursday, actually, at 5:30, it'll start at New Park. And there's a great concert going on, and we're just going to kind of piggyback off of that. Thanks to Brian Richards and Chris Eggleton letting us join them. And, yeah, the silent auction is all about raising money for the Back to School Basics program.
Okay. And, Pete, you want to tell us more about the Back to School Basics?
Yeah, Back to School Basics is one of our annual traditions to help meet the needs of the kids here in Park City who are on free and reduced lunch. This year we are hoping to serve 550 kids. Still, that's only half of the kids here on free and reduced lunch in Park City, 1,124 kids here in Park City schools. So if anybody wants to write a check for $110,000,
go ahead. We're very open to that, We're very open to that.
But yeah, we're hoping to raise that money for our August 11th. Back to School Basics at Tanger Outlets.
Basically, you just take them shopping, right, for school clothes, shoes, and things like that?
Yeah, it's just an opportunity. As a former teacher, you get to see kids come in new clothes, new school supplies, backpacks, and they're just really excited. So we want to make sure every kid here in Park City has that equal experience so they can all start with that same enthusiasm and safe, comfortable feeling. So, yep.
Okay. Let's see. The 20th. At 5:30, so it'll go 5:30 to 7:30. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, approximately. The concert starts at 6, but we'll start the silent auction a little early, so people are mingling and getting their spot. And then it'll go. I think the concert actually goes to about 8 o'clock.
And that's when the auction will close. Just after that.
That's correct. Yep.
All right. So what have you got? Some of the items that you're going to be auctioning off.
We've got all kinds. Pete's got a whole list of them, and it's on our website as well.
Yep.
But all kinds of good stuff. That
different
to choose from.
Yeah, vacations here locally, as well as golf for Promontory, Park City. And Jeremy Ranch. We've got a lot of local businesses, Skull Candy, Dugan's West, that have donated different products. We're really excited to have a lot of kid options. So if you're looking to put your kids into U Sports Alliance or Basin Rec programs or need to do a birthday party, we have lots of different things for local kids that parents can bid on. So, yeah, I tried to cover the gamut as well as coffee and wine and so forth. So, yeah.
So just curious why you decided this concert as opposed to maybe the one like at Deer Valley where you get more people.
Rob's a huge fan of the Stone Foxes.
Exactly, that's why. So I used to be in the band, actually.
He's a groupie. We have a really good relationship with New Park and also with Mountain Time Music. And so we've decided that has just kind of been a good historical place for us.
Yeah, good venue for us. Yeah.
Great. I drive by or ride by the building every day, and it's looking good. So when's it going to be finished?
Yeah, thank you. So the new building that's being built right now is going to be finished ideally September 1, and we'll be able to move all of our operations into there currently. We'll keep the boutique actually where it is next to Wendy Rich Cafe and Ritual Chocolate. And then once we're into our new building, then the current building we're in is going to be remodeled. And so we'll completely, not completely gut it, but we'll do a lot of changes on the inside, and then the exterior is going to completely change so it matches the new building. So that's another 6 to 7 months. And so the whole project will be done next April. That's the hope.
Okay.
So it's very exciting.
Yeah. So, but you'll be able to move your offices into the new building in September.
Yeah. Which would be super exciting.
So that's extensive in terms of some capital funding here. I mean, do you have a campaign going on? Or have you raised the money to do that?
No, we're about 70%. So, yeah, we're a $7.3 million campaign. So, yeah, if you're listening, we're still looking for support. We'd love to get more support. Our goal really, you know, once we're all finished, is to be 100% supported. So we have no debt to carry. So we're, again, 70% there. We've had great support so far, but we'd love to get more support from the community to finish that off.
Okay. And Pete, do you need help then on the August shopping day? Or
always, always. In addition to making those donations online on our website, we are looking for people to shop. So if you love shopping and you want to just make someone else's experience as they shop, I mean, just imagine if you have little kids trying to go shop for all of them, it's very challenging with young little ones. So just helping those families make that a really wonderful experience. And they can also go onto our website and volunteer for that.
Okay, and the website is again?
ccofpc.org.
Okay. Hey, Rob, Pete, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:54. Good morning. In the studio with us now to tell us more about a new collaboration between Youth Sports Alliance, Park City Community Foundation, and the Christian Center. I've got Heather Sims from YSA, Sarah McCarthy from the Community Foundation, and Pete still sticking in here. So good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
So maybe give us the background, Heather. What's going on here?
Yeah. So the Youth Sports Alliance comes up every year with three major challenges. One is transportation. The second is communication. I unfortunately don't speak Spanish. And the other one is getting gear for the kids that take part in our ski and snowboard program. And so last year was a year where I really felt that I needed help from these two organizations. And the Community Foundation provided financial assistance, and we were able to get almost 100 helmets. And they also helped us with translation and getting the information out to our Latino population to regarding registration and getting the kids information about scholarship nights, etc. And then the other thing is that we really struggled last year with getting gear for the kids, winter gear. And there are so many organizations in town that wanted to do clothing drives. And previously, I'd had almost 40 bags of used winter ski gear. And last year, I had 11. So I literally begged Pete to help me out and get kids clothed to be able to last them through the winter and go skiing. And so with Operation Hope last year, we came together and we were able to get the kids completely clothed. So the hope is that people are, you know, next month people are going to be going back to school, sorting out their clothing. We want them to start thinking about helping us out this year and saving out those clothes so that we can work together and get these kids clothed for the winter.
So usually people just bring it to the Christian Center and drop it off. So are you setting stuff aside then? Or
that's right. I'm hoarding all of the nice jackets from the little kids. And no, actually, that is true.
Yeah.
When we know the need, we're working together. And we're trying to make sure that all of these wonderful-hearted people in Park City know where all the resources can go so we can work with all the other agencies and make sure we hit every kid's need here in Park City.
Okay, and then what's the Community Foundation's role, Sarah?
The Community Foundation started an initiative earlier this year called the Solomon Fund. And the Solomon Fund identified very similar barriers to YSA. And we noticed there was a need and there was low participation in the Latino community in sports and recreation. So we jumped in and we're helping different agencies around town that offer sports and recreation with communication and outreach translations. We've been translating registration forms as well as information sheets and working on the communication piece as well, getting in contact with families. We've been sending out a newsletter that has information about sign-up opportunities at YSA, at the UOP, at the different organizations that offer these really wonderful opportunities in town. And then we've also been working on the transportation element as well as a scholarship and gear. So we've really identified the exact same barriers that we see that limit participation, and our goal is to facilitate access to sports and recreation for all kids here in Park City.
Yeah, you were accepting applications, right, for grant requests. Have you seen those come
yes,
in?
Yes, we've started to see those roll in. We have about 7 at this time. The deadline is July 28th. And what we are asking is we're really reaching out to the community and asking the community, okay, we see this need in our community. How can we increase access to sports and recreation? And what ideas do you have? We don't have all the answers. We've identified those three barriers. but we know that the community has a lot of great ideas as well. So we hope that people can apply for grants through the Solomon Fund, and if we find a really great idea, we're willing to help out and fund that.
And was it really the winter sports that you were looking for more activity in?
We're really, our donor is started out with sports and recreation, but we are really open to any way to get kids outside or even integrated into the community.
Okay. Heather, anything else you want to mention?
No, I just, I think, you know, we have so many great nonprofits in town, and I think that predominantly we're trying to serve the same communities. And so, you know, if we can work together, it's so much easier for everybody, and we can identify those exact needs. So hang on to your winter gear, and we'll let you know where to drop those stuff off on our website, ysaparkcity.org.
Okay. Hey, all, thanks for coming in. Thanks.